Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ. And today, my very special guest is Kelly Martinez. She is the first female undersheriff in the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. Now she's running for sheriff to fill the vacancy left by the retirement of longtime Sheriff Bill Gore. She's spent 37 years in the department, where she started the Sheriff's Homeless Assistance Resource Team, the marijuana enforcement teams, and helped manage the department's responses through some turbulent times, the pandemic, civil unrest, and more. She says she's committed to investing to improving public safety and jail safety, as well as filling critical staffing shortages. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam. It's great to be here.
So why don't you start? I've talked a little bit about your bio, but if you could tell our audience about your most relevant experiences and your top goals if you're elected.
Yes, absolutely. As you said, I've been with the Sheriff's Department for 37 years. My entire time has been with the Sheriff's Department in law enforcement. I've risen through the ranks, and I'm currently the undersheriff, which is the COO of the organization. I run the day-to-day operations of the Sheriff's Department.
Very important.
It's a big job. It's a $1.1 billion organization is our budget, and we have 4,200 square miles of public safety area that we cover in the county of San Diego, as well as 9 contract cities, all of the jails and the courthouses.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot, but I know that I've got a lot of experience, and I've been doing this for a long time, so I'm really excited. I'm very passionate about San Diego County, as well as the Sheriff's Department, so I decided to run for sheriff, and right now I have 3 main priorities. The first one is to hire more staff, as most law enforcement agencies in the nation are suffering from, you know, workforce shortages. So
sure. I think most businesses in general, it isn't just law enforcement. It's kind of a post-pandemic or late pandemic phenomenon. I think that a lot of people are just doing other things, not going back into the workforce.
Yeah, for sure. And so we're trying to figure out the way to best attract quality workers to the Sheriff's Department. And we need, you know, so the 2 really hard to fill positions for us are deputies and healthcare workers for our jails, which are 2 of the hardest to find, workers in America right now, I think so.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the jail situation, which is one of the biggest issues in the race. San Diego County, as you know, has had the most jail deaths of any major county in California. I think it's over 209 or around 209 since 2006, and that includes several this year. A state audit found the number to be so high that it actually recommended legislative reforms. Kelly, what steps are you committed to taking to reduce the number of jail deaths, including, I might add, the high number of suicides there, beyond what's been done in the past that obviously hasn't been enough?
Yeah, it hasn't been enough, as you said, and I fully embrace the audit. I'm really grateful for all of the work that the state auditors did. We worked with them when they were here in San Diego, and in February, as you know, that audit came out. It was pretty scathing, I think, as a couple of reporters have said, which I completely agree with, but we're doing a lot. We're investing in the jails. We haven't invested enough in the jails in probably at least a decade. So infrastructure, we're committed to spend $30 million to redo and renovate the George Bailey detention facility this year. Hopefully that project will start in June or July. So that will help a lot as far as getting a newer facility. It'll be a safer facility for the deputies and for the individuals in our custody.
Good.
I don't want to cut you off. There's so many things that we're doing. The wireless improvement project in the jails, which will do a lot of things. Improving the wireless connectivity in the jails will help with our healthcare system. It'll connect all of our healthcare data and computers to each other. Right now, they don't all talk to each other. So a psychiatrist might not know what another doctor has done, or also the connectivity to the community care system. So understanding what an individual's healthcare history was in the community before they come into our custody is really important. We're moving towards having medical and mental health care assessments for every individual at intake, and that'll be a hands-on assessment, which will be really important. Right now, we do it. It takes a week or more to get that assessment done, which is too long. A lot of that's going to hinge on being able to hire the healthcare workers that we need and the mental health assessors that we need. I implemented the body-worn camera program in our jails, which is really important because it's starting already to de-escalate situations. Having folks on camera really changes the way that they behave, I think, in some
circumstances. I imagine so. I would think both the prisoners and the deputies, if they know somebody's watching, you're less apt to have, you know, a bad situation. Makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's been, you know, and it's been really well received by our staff where we've piloted it at Las Colinas. We're hoping to move it to the men's jail next. And a lot of that's going to be part of the wireless project. We have to have better wireless connectivity to be able to implement all of those cameras, but we're moving in that direction and we have the money set aside.
Very good.
There's just a lot of things. The medically assisted treatment program that we're starting where we can help with drug addiction. You know, substance use is a huge problem in society, but also for the people that come into our custody. So,
especially with fentanyl, I think according to the DEA, that fentanyl deaths are up 888% or something like that in recent years here. It's just very alarming. Kelly, beyond the jail situation, I think if we ask the average person on the streets out there, they're always going to say, you know, what are you going to do to reduce crime, especially violent crime? And I might add human trafficking, which really seems to have a hub, unfortunately, in parts of East County like Spring Valley and Lemon Grove.
Yeah, so the Human Trafficking Task Force was started a number of years ago. I was lucky enough to be one of the first lieutenants that sat on that. It oversaw that unit along with Summer Steffen when she was a DDA at the time. And so it's been a passion of all of ours for a long time in San Diego County. So we're working aggressively to stop that, to educate folks about what to look for, because I don't think everyone always understands what a human trafficking victim might look like. Yeah. And, you know, it's not just sex trafficking. There's a lot of human slavery, frankly, that goes on with people, you know, in certain industries where they are working long hours. They're brought here to this country by people they don't speak the language. And so they aren't being paid the wages they should be paid and all of those types of things. So, but yes, public safety is on everyone's mind right now. You certainly see it all the time in the news, the concerns about violent crime, the guns. We are seeing more guns all the time, the ghost gun problem.
We can jump ahead if you want. I had a question further down on guns, but sure. I did want to ask what your views are about guns and striking that balance to keep, you know, to reduce gun violence and deal with issues like ghost guns, while at the same time, you know, respecting maybe the need of those who may want to get a carry, what do you call it, a concealed carry permit for self-defense purposes.
Yeah, it certainly is a balance. And it's really a balance between lawful gun ownership and those who are really bent to do harm to other people and have guns for, you know, for the wrong purposes. Right. The ghost guns are primarily, they're unregistered weapons that are easy for offenders who should not have guns and who have, are prohibited from having guns possessed, you know, and they use them for criminal means, where the concealed carry weapon, you know, the CCW permits that you're talking about, those are issued by the sheriff. I believe in issuing those, you know, having a good process for that. We've fixed our process for the CCW permits. It was taking almost 2 years to get a first appointment.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit under Sheriff Gore on that where sort of gun rights advocates had sued, claiming they didn't think he was issuing enough of those permits. And I guess ultimately that was resolved by the court. But, you know, just wanted to ask you if you had a comment on that. Let's move on. On your website, you talk about supporting certain alternatives to law enforcement responses in some cases. You have been working with the county to implement mobile crisis response teams and crisis stabilization units, which I guess are clinics for mental health. But so far, those are only in North County. So I'm wondering, how well are those teams and the centers working out? And what are the odds of getting a similar center out here in East County?
Yeah, well, the odds are really good. We're working towards that and working towards one down in South Bay. The second one up in North County opened recently, and they've just been having hundreds of people that have been not only walk-ins, community walk-ins that go and get care at the crisis stabilization unit, but also drop-offs for law enforcement, which take about 10 or 15 minutes and put deputies and officers back out on the street doing the other work that they need to be doing. So they've been terrific. They've been welcomed. The hard part, again, is finding those healthcare workers and those mental health clinicians that can work in those facilities. So, but I know there are plans to bring them to both South County and East County. So
very good. I would also like to ask what can be done to improve trust in law enforcement after the recent racial justice protests nationally and locally drew attention to racial profiling and use of force issues in minority communities. And I might add, you know, we've seen these issues locally in places like Santee and Lakeside, where there would be sometimes arrests of protesters for things like curfew. And yet, even when violence against protesters was shown on videos with, say, white supremacist type groups out there beating up and assaulting people, they didn't get arrested. So I would like to ask, what would you do to improve the trust in the community, especially in these areas where minorities have tended to feel very marginalized, like say Santee and Lakeside?
Yeah, I think it's really important. We need to trust our communities in order for them to trust us. I think that it kind of goes both ways, and we really need to have those conversations. But beyond conversations, we need to have action and fair treatment. And so I really do encourage that. I encourage our sergeants and our supervisors to constantly look at the bodywork camera footage, see what the interactions look like with our deputies, make sure they're on track, the training that we provide, as well as, you know, our screening process when we hire people. It's really important that we have a good idea of who we're hiring.
Okay. I would like to talk about the changes recently in access to scanner traffic, which is something that directly affects us. You may not be familiar, but we run the East County Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. I know you've said you're committed to transparency and you've done a lot toward putting more data and things on the website. But as background to this for the audience out there, in January, just before Sheriff Gore retired, the state had passed a law which required that private information not be broadcast over scanners, which I think everyone would agree is appropriate. The problem is that while some agencies like San Diego Police decided to only encrypt privacy data and kept everything else public, the Sheriff's Department did the opposite and took everything onto private channels. And so the upshot of that, Kelly, is we've been unable to alert the public because we don't know about it, about things like the escaped prisoner recently at Grossmont Hospital, running around, you know, near a shopping mall, near a trolley stop, near apartment buildings, near a hospital. And yet we were kept in the dark, as was other media. Same with things like high-speed chases, chasing suspects through neighborhoods, and potentially during fires. You know, we often hear on scanners where the sheriff may suddenly announce that a road is blocked by fire or that they're going out to shut down a flooded roadway during flash flood. So my question to you is, given that the sheriff does have, you know, they already can move things onto a secure channel when, say, there's a SWAT action, would you commit to restore the public and media access to listen to everything that's not, you know, required to be encrypted for privacy reasons? And do we have to wait until you're elected to do that? Or is that something we can get started on right away to protect the public safety?
Well, I completely agree with you. The media and the public need to know what's going on in their area, and they need to know as quickly as they can so that they can take action. Quickly on the escapee, he never got anywhere near any shopping malls or anything. He barely made it out of the hospital because he injured himself when he fell. But aside from that, if that were the case, you absolutely should have known that there was a dangerous situation if there was one. We this weekend unveiled, and I hope you'll get online and look at it, a live CAD where you can look at what's occurring in any area. It'll tell you what incidents we are responding to. And it says in plain language, not in police code, so you can understand what, if it's a rape or it's an assault or what it is, the 100 block of where it's occurring. And we just rolled it out this weekend. There'll be a press release coming out today.
That's all really good. My question on that, though, is most media today, us included, don't have the resources to dispatch a reporter out to every single scene. So being able to actually listen in real time on scanners to what's happening is super important, not just knowing that you're responding to a burglary or a rape or whatever it is, but what's happening. You know, is someone fleeing? Is there a public danger, which is where we get involved? I'm less concerned, you know, about something else, but when the public safety might be at risk, that's where it becomes critical. I can't tell you how many times I've pulled over when I'm driving and I hear a bunch of sirens go screaming past to use my cell phone like a scanner, turn on the, you know, Broadcastify or Radio Reference and see what, oh, you know, there's a multi-car collision. The freeway, the highway is blocked ahead of me. They're getting ready to bring an air ambulance in for someone. You know, it's really, really useful to be able to know those kind of things and not have to run home to your computer and look at what's going on. Although it's, I think it's good that you're adding that, but.
Well, I wasn't quite finished explaining, and you can look it up on your phone, and we will be improving it. And so that these suggestions are very welcome. We write, because of the security of our system, we weren't immediately able to put a link to the call, but you'll be able to see a link and you'll be able to pull up all of those details of what's going on with the call. We're not there yet. And, you know, the law, as you said, when it passed in January, although we do have more capability than the smaller agencies as far as dispatching, we weren't able to, we didn't believe for officer safety reasons, be able to have our people switch back and forth when they're going to be talking about personal information. So we're still trying to fix that. This is sort of a something to bridge in the meantime, but you can certainly take the call number and call our watch commander line, and they'll fill you in on whatever details that you'd like to know.
Yeah, that's helpful. I know a lot of the public listens too. I have members of the public all the time that'll call me up and say, did you know about the fire I just heard about on the scanner or the whatever, you know, hey, the sheriff says they're chasing somebody through my neighborhood. So I'm not always first, you know, if I'm not listening to the scanner that moment. But the nice thing about the scanner software is that you can listen when you're driving and you can't you can't pull over and be texting and, you know, reading stuff when you're driving.
I understand that it's a passive way to see it, and our Twitter and everything else is not listening. We're trying to improve it. We'd like it to be as easy as possible for everyone, while at the same time being able to maintain our operations and do it safely and protect the information. So we're trying to thread that needle between, you know, the law and what we can do, what we can make work operationally and still provide information, but it's a work in progress. And I hope we'll continue to do better.
That would be great. Thank you. What is your approach to whatever the sheriff's department can do to help reduce homelessness and get help for those that are on the streets? There's been a lot of approaches tried in the past. Tell us about yours.
Yeah. So as I said before, I started the homeless assistance resource team, and we were fully funded for that team by the Board of Supervisors. It's 8 deputies and a sergeant. They work all over the unincorporated San Diego County, and they work in partnership with all of the different non-governmental organizations, as well as the county HHSA and behavioral health, and providing services. They've housed hundreds of people so far. We're struggling right now with some of the homeless population that doesn't necessarily want to be housed.
And we're seeing that. El Cajon, I know there's an encampment the city keeps complaining about that's where it is at. Yeah. It's, I hate to use the term, but sort of the more hardcore homeless, you know, people that have been offered help, from what I understand, and won't take it. They had a drug overdose. They had a trafficking incident out there. How do you handle that when you have folks that don't want to help or won't accept it?
Well, you know, if they're not committing a crime, the sheriff can't really do much. Just refer them to services and hope that they, you know, that we can get them the help they need. I know that there's a lot of discussion amongst legislators about some conservatorship laws and different things that might help with that. I know that the mayor in San Diego and some other elected officials are trying to build more housing, you know, get more housing built that's low income, middle income. So there's just so much political will right now. I'm hopeful that in the next couple of years, we'll make a lot more progress.
Very good. Let's talk about your approach to illegal marijuana dispensaries. Another big problem in East County, especially the unincorporated areas where the legal ones aren't, where there's no such thing as legal ones yet. Tell us about your approach and how successful it's been.
Yeah, so last year, or I guess the year before last, we recognized the need. There were so many unlicensed dispensaries, particularly in our Spring Valley area in East County. It was really creating so much problem. We were having everything, every crime you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Robberies.
I can hear the shootings from where I live down the street there. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's a horrible way.
I had a bullet on my driveway.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's a terrible environment for residents of those communities. And a lot of time it's low income communities that are suffering from this, and people were being victimized. And so we didn't have a very effective approach. So I wanted to dedicate a team to handling those dispensaries, just dedicated a sergeant and a team of detectives, as well as an analyst to help them find those dispensaries and work with those. So they've been very successful. We have zero unlicensed dispensaries in the unincorporated area.
I was going to say, I drive through that area every day and I haven't seen any in a long time. And it used to seem like it was whack-a-mole. You'd see one, I mean, even like right across the street from the sheriff substation, and it would take weeks or months to shut it down. And 5 minutes later, there'd be another one a block away. So that does seem to be working. So congratulations on that one.
Thanks. And I want to really give kudos to Supervisor Anderson and Chairman Fletcher. They were the ones who provided us the funding, full-time funding for that team. And it's going to continue. Yeah. So as they pop up, they will inevitably pop up again. We'll shut them down and just keep working on them.
Yeah. And I think the county is looking at a framework to allow some legal sales, which may also drive the illegal ones, you know, maybe somewhere else. At least that's what happened, I'm told, in La Mesa. So
yeah,
the verdict is out on that, I guess. Let's talk about response times in rural areas. Some of the places out here, such as Campo and Hacumba, have very slow response times, at least the last time I checked. And admittedly, I haven't looked in the last year or so, but it seems like every couple of years I'll pull the figures. And, you know, it can sometimes be an hour or even more, even for very serious crimes, like where somebody is being, you know, attacked or something. It's to the point that residents out there will tell me they'll often call Border Patrol first, even though it's not really a Border Patrol issue, because they know somebody is going to show up. And the sheriff, from what I understand, doesn't have people stationed there 24/7 overnight. They have to wake somebody up and come in from somewhere else. Can more be done to improve the response times to the taxpayers in rural areas who, after all, are paying, you know, just as much for law enforcement services, but they're really not getting, the help that they need in some cases?
Yeah. So, and you hit the nail on the head. It's a staffing issue, and the unincorporated areas of San Diego County have not, we haven't had the funding for staffing for a long time. Pre-pandemic, I was working towards adding unincorporated staff, and we were successful in doing that in some of our areas. I think the other key, particularly in North County, is we're purchasing some property at 15 and 76 with the eventual build of a station there, which will split the beat in half from a 400 some square mile beat to about 200 square miles, which will make response times much quicker. The problem is when you only have one or two deputies on a beat and one of them gets tied up downtown at the jail or, you know, at the hospital, then we don't have someone available to go to those calls. So my goal is to continue adding unincorporated staff. I think that's really the solution. We've looked at whether the, 24 hours, 7 day a week model with the staffing we have out there is better and will improve response times. It really won't. It's better for us to just have deputies who live on the beat. And if they get woken up in the middle of the night, they respond. It's quicker.
Yeah. All right. Tell us about, what have we not covered yet? What are some of your endorsements that you are most proud of and would like our audience to know about?
Yeah, I'm proud that I had some very early endorsements from Senator Pro Tem Tony Atkins, Chairman Nathan Fletcher, Mayor Todd Gloria, Mayor Mary Salas. But I also got the endorsement of Sheriff Bill Gore. He believed in me quite a bit and obviously promoted me throughout my career. I'm proud of his endorsement. The Deputy Sheriff's Association, certainly the rank and file deputies on our department, it's very important to have their support when you're trying to make change and fix and improve things. Also, the chiefs and sheriff in the county. I really believe in collaboration for public safety. If we don't work together as a region, as law enforcement, and pool our resources, we're not going to be as effective.
Very good. In general, Kelly, what are some of the areas where you hope to continue and enhance Sheriff Gore's legacy? And on the other side of that, what are the areas where you might hope to take a different approach?
Yeah, well, you know, he created the information-led policing or intelligence-led policing model that we have on our department. Yeah. We have 33 analysts now, crime intelligence analysts. I really think a data-driven, evidence-based approach to law enforcement and public safety is hugely important. I've always believed in that work, so I'll continue that. Just investments in our jails. As I said, we haven't invested enough in our jails, and that's something that I hope will be my legacy, is creating a better jail environment and for not only our staff, but also for the individuals in our custody.
Very good. We have been speaking with Kelly Martinez, who is the undersheriff for San Diego County, and she's seeking to become San Diego County's first woman sheriff in the upcoming election. The primary is the first Tuesday in June, right? And I guess if nobody gets more than 50%, then there would be a runoff in November. I'm going to let you have the final word today, Kelly. Well, first, let me tell folks where they can get more information at kellymartinezforsheriff.com. What else would you like our audience to know that I may not have asked you about today?
I appreciate this so much, Miriam, and being able to talk with you today. It's been really a wonderful conversation. I'd just like to say that I'm the most experienced and qualified candidate in this race. I'm passionate about San Diego. I'm passionate about public safety and doing the best job we can in the Sheriff's Department. So I hope people will remember that when they go to vote in June and then in November.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.